This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Age of Radio.
Brit Pick.
That's just the time of year again, isn't it?
Oh, boy! Oh, what, they gonna come over and use our fucking house?
This is that our main form of income is when they come over and do these movies, where they pick movies and watch them, eh?
Why they have to do it in our house, and why do they pay us 600 bloody pounds?
I don't fucking know, do I? But I will tell you, that money comes in handy, and I'm happy to do it.
That money comes from Andy's?
It comes from Andy's, yeah. They forward it to Andy's and then Andy sends it over to us.
Oh, I thought you meant like it comes from Andy's.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No. These boys are straight up.
Who's on first?
Ah, third base.
Okay, what the hell? We have to go on now.
Oh, you guys are here, are you? Hello, Brendan. Hello, Jason.
Hey. Hey, guys. What's going on? Is our studio ready?
It's all prepped for
us. Oh, day, what is ready if you're ready?
Yeah, I would say we're ready.
Hey, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. That's from the Will Hunt movie, that, eh?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's a new one I got. Because
yeah,
he
loves movies, he does. We think about doing our own podcast, eh?
I don't know if you know this, but in the UK, I'm using the stereotype of, like, Eastern European countries getting movies late, but I'm applying it to the UK for some fucking reason.
That's why this guy's funny, eh? He's sharp. He's sharp.
Yeah, watch out, Ricky Gervais.
This has been fun and all, guys, but can you clear out? We really have to...
We have to record a podcast here.
It's going to take us about 90 minutes to 2 hours, so if you guys could just kind of move along. It's all right.
We'll just be out in the living room if you need us, eh? If you need a beer, if you need a drink, you need an Andy, you just call Brendan. You just call Brendan, he'll be right there. He'll give you a hand job, no problem.
Or give him, like, no one's business. And in fact, it's no one's business, so don't tell anyone I gave you Andy.
I thought he said Brendan was going to give me the handy, not you.
I got confused with my own identity. Now I'm Australian. Boy, crikey.
Let's get out of here. Let's let these boys get to work, eh?
All right.
Bye.
Bollocks.
Yeah, bye, guys.
Wow. See ya. You know what? If those guys weren't real and they were like, it was two people doing those accents, it would be extremely offensive.
It would be like a caricature. But thankfully, because they're real people, it doesn't matter.
They're real people, guys.
I mean, you can't argue with truth.
We pay $600 for the studio space.
$600, 600 pounds, Brendan.
Oh, 600 pounds, sorry.
Do you know how hard it is to get pound money here?
I mean, I thought you just had to email the A&E show My 700-Pound Life or whatever the fuck that's called.
You don't think I do that every week and I have not got a single fucking pent from them?
So you got 700 of them. Can't you spare one?
That's right. That's right.
That show's about money, right?
I assume. I've never watched it.
Yeah. But this show is not about money.
No.
But it does make $1 trillion a week. Don't worry about it. Your check's coming in the mail.
Wait a minute.
This podcast is called...
We're going to have a talk.
This is a podcast called For Screen...
And Country.
And I'm Brendan.
And I'm Jason.
Normally on this show, Jason, what do we do?
Well, we normally go through a list. Mm-hmm. That list of the top 100 British films as ordained by the British Film Institute in the year of our Lord, 1999, but not this week, Brendan, because we are doing one of our famous sub-series. And what is that sub-series called, Brendan?
So famous, it's called Brit Picks.
And what do we do on Brit Picks, Brendan?
We each present a film and discuss whether it maybe should go on the BFI Top 100 if there is an update in the future. And now normally, Jason, we each pick a movie that we have previously seen.
Absolutely.
This is not the case.
This is not the case because it was my pick this week, Brendan, and I decided to pick 2014's Kingsman, the Secret Service. And the reason I picked that is because after having watched both James Bond movies, the Ipcress File and the Avengers, I hadn't actually seen this
Not
movie.
The Marvel one, guys. Calm down.
Calm down. I hadn't seen this movie, and I wanted to actually finally see it because I felt like this movie is kind of would try to do what the Avengers wanted to do mm-hmm. and failed so horribly at.
Yeah. Iron Man, not the best spy.
Yeah, he's hard. It's hard for him to blend in.
It really is, unless he goes to like a factory of all Iron Men.
Well, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Oh, there he's fine. Nobody's gonna notice him.
No, oh, it's just one of the Iron Men. Carry on, boss.
Why is that guy painted red? Oh shit.
But yeah, that's what we're doing. So Kingsman: The Secret Service is what we're gonna talk about. Before we talk about that, Jason, we should read some comments about the last film on the list that we discussed.
Sure.
Which was The Man in the White Suit, your favorite film.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you. I just summed everything up so everyone yeah. knows what we're doing.
No, you get an A+ mark on this one, bro.
Okay. Okay.
This is your evaluation, by the way. It's your monthly employee evaluation.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Go
so
ahead.
You're doing real good so far. So just keep doing what you do. Just pretend I'm not here.
Well, all right. I don't know how that's going to go, but I'll try.
I'm going to separate myself here. I've done a bunch of ketamine, so I'm going to separate myself from myself, and I'm going to observe myself as we interact, and then I will evaluate myself as well.
Sounds complicated.
Right, just give me a sec here. Oh! Okay, I'm good. Let's do this.
Perfect. So, Jason, we got some comments. Let's start us off here.
Let's dive into these comments. We have yet another comment from our serial commenter, one of many, Adam Pellman. Adam says, of The Man in the White Suit, quote, that's what you get. You get a quote, Adam. I really enjoyed this one. For such an old movie, for such an old film, pardon me, its theme of new technology making a whole industry obsolete felt incredibly relevant to our modern era when concerns about automation and AI are so prevalent. That's right. You would be able to say, Adam, that Alec Guinness in this movie was disrupting the textile industry.
You said that as if like I was going to applaud you for such yeah, amazing
you
pun
should.
Or something.
You should. I'm using a buzzword.
Disrupting.
Yeah. And then everybody breaks out into cheers, and it's like fucking Kramer walked in the door.
Oh wait, I'm supposed to pretend you're not here. I forgot about that.
Well, no, I'm here, but I'm not here. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha,
you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha,
it was the ketamine.
Gotcha.
Next comment, Brendan.
Yeah, next comment. It's our good old friend Sharon Horwat.
And in a significant change this week.
Well, I'm not going to spoil it yet.
All right, well, let's see what happens.
But she starts out by saying, turns out this was free on Canopy.
Oh.
So here are my thoughts I had while watching it.
So in future, we can only watch movies on Canopy, is what you're saying.
That's right. Sorry, BFI Top 100. There's some limited choices left.
For Screening Country, where we talk about the top 100 movies on Canopy, as ordained by some guy last year.
By Joseph Canopy. So here are her thoughts. Hey, look, Sydney invented the Blue Man Group with those musical pipes of his.
Ah.
It's quite nice to see Joan Greenwood in a movie where she doesn't say the N-word, and she's referring to Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Ooh, wow, we've got something to look forward to.
Listen, we've had a lot of comments that reference that movie, that we haven't done that movie. That's kind of becoming our new Carry On Up the Khyber.
That's right, so we've got two more Powell and Pressburgers, don't we?
That's not a Powell and Pressburger.
Isn't it?
No.
Oh, I thought it was.
No.
Is
it's
it
just
a,
it's a no, it's
is
just
it a Pressburger.
It's neither of them. Oh. It's an Ealing movie with Al Guinness playing many different roles.
Oh, so he's doing an Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, it's Kind Hearts and Coronets to the Clumps.
Nice. Continue.
This movie definitely feels like an inspired there you go. There you inspired go. Movies like The Nutty Professor and The Absent-Minded Professor.
And perhaps Flubber?
And The Absent-Minded Professor, well, that's the original Flubber.
Yeah,
and that, actually, I just saw I'm that smart. For the first time like a week ago.
Oh, I've never seen it.
It was really good.
I never saw either of them.
It's a lot of fun.
I didn't particularly care for Robin Williams at that point in my life.
Well, no, I'm
unless he was in serious movies.
I'm not, yeah, like Patch Adams.
That's right. What dreams may come.
Oh, yeah, classic. No, Absent-Minded Professor, I always, for some reason, thought it was Jerry Lewis. It's Fred McMurray. What's wrong with me?
Hmm, yeah. No, he was good Jerry Lewis, The Nutty Professor.
Yeah, exactly. Mrs. Watson seems like the loveliest old lady. She probably would have had some delicious saltwater taffy in her parlor at all times.
Mm-hmm.
The good old days when you could just casually dump an unknown chemical substance down the drain without a second thought. This is a quote from Sydney here. I won't stay in your house another minute. Immediately gets thrown out. Perfect joke. All of these explosions as punchlines seem to have inspired Monty Python or Jim Henson, right?
Probably, but also I think explosions have always been a good punchline. I don't know what the first explosion as a punchline was. I feel like we'd have to go back to like Harold Lloyd or Buster Keaton or something.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I see the Jim Henson connection for sure, because the thing with the, you know, Beaker and...
That's my favorite the Kermit song.
Whatever that doctor's name. Someday they'll find it, the Henson connection. The cocaine, the Muppets, and me.
Oh, the guys, I found him. He's 6 feet down to the ground out back. Let's go get him.
Listen, Jim Henson's family and friends, I don't know if he did cocaine. Don't sue me.
We don't assume, although the idea of Kermit on cocaine does appeal to me.
If you have any doubt, search out Sesame Street on drugs. You can find it on your local Napster device.
That's right.
I watched that when I was like...
I'm sure Sharon is loving us butchering her comments this way.
Listen,
continue.
Listen, I just want to say I watched Sesame Street on drugs, like the clip when I was like 13 or 14, and it was hilarious.
You were on drugs at 13 or 14?
All the time, Jason.
I never stopped.
Sharon says, I overall think this movie works better in black and white, but the glow-in-the-dark effect probably would work better with color. Man, 80-minute movies are so nice.
Fucking right, Sharon.
And then finally she says, I did a teensy bit of research on Ealing Studios, and it turns out the studios are still being used today, and one movie that filmed on their lots is Shaun of the Dead.
What?
Technically an Ealing Studios movie.
Wow. An institution in British film.
Yeah. Thank you, Sharon, for all your kind words and observations.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for, and thank you to Canopy for having this movie here for free.
Canopy, if you want a co-sponsorship, let's do this.
All right. Well, moving on from Sharon, we appreciate your comment. But our next comment comes from Davey Morrison. I don't recognize the name, so he may be a first-time commenter. If you're not Davey, I'm sorry.
I think he's commented a couple times. But
it's a good name, though. A delightful movie. I recommend director Alexander McKendrick's book on filmmaking to anyone interested in learning about the craft of film directing. I also recommend his film The Maggie, another Ealing comedy classic.
When I read that, I said, maybe we'll have to watch that one day just to see. We got to find the McKendrick movie for you.
There's got
to
be one. It speaks to me.
Even Sweet Smell of Success might be it. Mm-hmm. Never know.
I do like the smell of success.
You can go ahead and take the other one. Mine was pretty long.
Kenneth... I think I've had trouble with this one
before. McElinden.
McElinden. Mick. It's a Mick, not a Mac, so I have a little bit of a prejudice against him because he's missing that important A, but I'll let it slide. Ken says, it is a very solid satire that is both silly and biting in a way I enjoyed. My instant synopsis of it is as follows. Capital and labor respond to disruption in the usual way. Comedic panic. That's actually a really good distillation of this movie, Ken. Thank you.
I think when I read the comedic panic line, I actually could picture that like on the back of the VHS box.
Absolutely.
Ross Waldorf simply says, love this movie. Probably my favorite of those Ealing comedies. And I just thought that was a good comment to pull because I think you said this is your least of the McKendrick movies.
I don't know. Actually,
No?
Man in the White Suit is a McKendrick movie.
Man in the White Suit, and then, Whiskey Galore, and The Lady Killers.
And The Lady Killers. You know, I think Lady Killers is probably my least favorite of the three, for sure.
But they're all fucking terrible, right?
Yeah, No, they're the worst. They're up there with the Ishtar?
Yeah. Maybe? Ishtar and Heaven's Gate. Man in the White Suit, all in the same plateau.
Have you ever seen Heaven's Gate?
No.
I hear it's good if you watch the 4-hour director's cut.
Okay, so I will never hear that it's good.
By the way, thank you, Ross. Love your salad. Next comment, final comment.
Yeah.
Chris Berry, again, the actor, the composer, I don't know, but he's writing in again. And what does he have to say, Brendan?
You tell me.
Well, no, you tell me. You only got that tiny little Ross Waldorf there.
I bet I read a monster of a comment.
Ah, dude, go for it.
Christopher Berry says, not my favorite Ealing comedy, but one of my favorite performances by Alec Guinness. He really carries the whole film. He shows off his comic chops in this. With anyone else in the central role, I doubt it would hold the affection that it does.
Chris, I agree with your comment 100%. Alec Guinness is the standard of this movie. It's a cool movie, but yes, without him, this isn't probably on this list, I would say.
All right.
Nothing against everybody else in it, but... You need an Alec Guinness.
See, I don't know. I don't know about that just in the sense that Whiskey Galore is on this list, and I don't think it has anyone quite as notable.
But it gets
as
the
Alec
texture
Guinness.
Right. Which is more than can be said for some other movies.
We're out of whiskey.
Exactly.
Great line.
That's what Scotsman would say if they were out of whiskey.
Okay, Jason, our last thing we do here is we have to compare this movie, which is number 58 on the BFI Top 100, to the movie that is number 58 on the AFI Top 100, the American Film Institute, and that movie is the Charlie Chaplin film, The Gold Rush.
I've seen some Chaplin, but not The Gold Rush.
I think you were hoping you were like, Great Dictator, like, I've seen it, come on.
I've seen Great Dictator.
No, this is The Gold Rush. And I mean, as much as I really like Man in the White Suit, I feel like I have a prejudice because I'm like, every time there's like two great movies, I always veer towards the AFI side. I should get rid of that part of me.
Well, we are fellows from the Western Hemisphere. I guess technically so is England, but we're from, you know, the far Western Hemisphere.
I'm toxic. Just end it now. God save the Queen.
You're Britney Spears? DMCA'd.
I like the AFI better sometimes. Save Britney. But I'm going to say, yeah, I mean, the Gold Rush is like a fucking classic Chaplin. So, I mean, I have to give it to the Gold Rush.
Now, does he find any gold?
I need to think eventually. I don't remember. I don't think that's a real important part of the movie.
I mean, it is to me.
Oh, sorry. He doesn't, but he does eat his own shoe.
Oh, so that's where that comes from.
Yes, that is from that movie.
Nice,
yep.
Nice.
I believe.
Every Looney Tunes cartoon that ever featured a hungry character.
Yeah, it's got to be that movie, because it's not modern times. Yeah, it's Gold Rush. Yeah, it's Gold Rush.
I bet you nobody ate their shoe in fucking The Birth of a Nation.
I mean, I will never know, because I don't want to watch it. We're talking about the new one, right? Newer one?
Okay. Sure, yeah. It's about the KKK, right? And they're the good guys?
Yeah, and the director, actually, let's not talk about him. Moving on. We're going to talk about this week's movie, something a little different, because we're going to talk about Brit picks, and we're starting off with Kingsman: The Secret Service. So that little opening number, combined with the explosions, because this movie doesn't have time for a song at the beginning with no action going on.
No, absolutely not.
But does that mean, of course, we're talking about, like we said, Kingsman: The Secret Service, 2014, directed by Matthew Vaughn, comic by Mark Miller, who is an interesting person who has been accused of some ists in the past.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No, I don't think on like a personal, I'm speaking in this way in public kind of thing, but like his comics have gotten some criticism in that regard.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that once we get to the movie. But we're talking about Kingsman: The Secret Service. Jason, you kind of mentioned a little bit, but break it down why you chose this one.
Well, I chose this one simply because the glasses mainly.
This
is the glasses.
God save the Queen.
Well, the glasses in this movie, not exactly the same, but they certainly remind me of the glasses that Michael Caine wears in Ipcrest File, and they remind me of Austin Powers' glasses, so we got some spy connections there. It's obvious that Matthew Vaughn is a fan of James Bond movies and Michael Caine and all that sort of stuff. But the main reason I chose is because I thought we could, in the context of those movies I mentioned earlier, we have a lot to talk about. But there's a few things I need to note right off the bat about my experience with this movie. So I've known this movie's existed for a while, saw the trailer years ago, thought, oh, that does look cool. I do want to see it, just never got around to watching it. Did not know this was an R-rated movie.
Okay.
Did not know this was an R-rated movie.
And you knew 5 minutes in.
When heads started getting fucking plugged, I knew that it was an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that I've never done heroin. But I imagine, you know, if you don't kill yourself, you can take too much heroin, and it probably fucks your head up. We've been doing a certain level of movie heroin, Brendan. We've been watching a lot of British movies from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and there's a certain level that we've become accustomed to.
Like a base level.
A base level of kind of energy and excitement and technique.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, thrusting ourselves 30, 40 years forward into 2014's Kingsman: The Secret Service, my head was blown apart. There's a lot going on in this movie.
it, it is really a pace change.
We took a lot with this movie, and our heads were melted.
We went from a puff of a cigarette to a full bag of cocaine.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. This movie is brutal in parts and balls to the wall for most of it.
It doesn't really stop.
So this movie is a classic Hollywood story. This is the story of a young boy making good. This is basically Star Wars.
Basically
Star Wars. You know, the guy's
Hero's Journey.
You know, so we open up, and so we saw that title sequence there. That is a fucking great title sequence because, first off, it features Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, which is a fantastic song. And they are attacking a seemingly ancient Arabic-style fort in the middle of a generic Arab country.
I believe the Chiron says the Middle East, 1997.
Middle East, 1997. Good time, right before Saddam Hussein and the whole weapons inspection thing. So they fly in on a helicopter, start firing missiles, and then as the music's playing and you hear those explosions, we have the titles forming from the debris that falls off the building.
Yeah, and that pretty much like is the tone of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, they are cramming a lot into this, and so we learn that Harry Hart,
played by Colin Firth,
played wonderfully by Colin Firth.
We've talked about him many times.
Yes, he's been in many movies we've seen. So he's works for this organization called the Kingsmen, and they're on a mission, and they're trying to, I assume, torture a terrorist, which is what they're doing because they fucking he shoots him in both knees when he's trying to get information out of him, and then the dude reaches down and pulls the pin out of a grenade, I guess, between his knees. They missed.
Yeah, and then a guy comes over and jumps on him and covers up the grenade.
The newbie in the team jumps on him and saves everybody's lives by sacrificing his own, and it turns out that man was the father of our main character.
Yes, to which Colin Firth then quickly looks over at the other man and says, well, you're Lancelot now.
Yep.
Meaning
been promoted.
Yeah, you've been promoted. I want to round out the cast in this before we go too much further. Mm. I don't want to, obviously we'll run down like the basics of the plot.
Yeah.
So we don't do that anymore, Jason.
No, we're not going to go through it step by step.
But I do want to round out the cast. So, joining Colin Firth as Harry Hart / codename Galahad, we have Mark Strong as Merlin. He's kind of the tech guy, I guess. Although he does like see a little bit of action. We have Taron Egerton, who, while I'm not sure if this is his debut, it was the thing that launched him.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely after this, he goes up. You can only go from here to Robin Hood 2018, a classic film that no one should see.
I'm sure you've done that on your other podcast?
Surprisingly, no.
Oh, wow.
But hashtag coming soon. we also have Michael Caine as Chester King, codename Arthur.
We can't have a spy movie without having Michael Caine in there somewhere.
We gotta have Michael Caine.
That's right. It wouldn't be the right thing if he wasn't there.
We have Samuel L. Jackson as the villain Richmond Valentine, which we'll talk about a lot, I think.
Less expected to see in a movie like this.
You didn't know he was in this?
No, I just mean the idea of seeing Sam Jackson as the villain in a spy movie is hilarious.
Well, yes, this is the first American actor I've mentioned. There's another one. We have Sophie Cookson as Roxy, codenamed Lancelot later on, obviously. Mm-hmm. One actress that I really like is Sophia Boutella. Mm. She plays Gazelle.
Yes.
With the razor sharp fucking knife legs or whatever, sword legs.
Quentin Tarantino wishes he'd have thought up her.
Yeah, exactly. And last but not least.
Actually, no, that's not true because she doesn't have feet, so never mind.
He's like, gotta see them feets.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Jason, we have British actor extraordinaire Mark Hamill playing Professor James Arnold in a little bit of an extended cameo.
Surprise for me to be like, wait a minute, is that Mark Hamill?
You know what? I'm just going to go right into the clip. I want to play him doing a British accent.
Yeah, you got to hear this. This is fantastic.
Hello. Can I help you?
Yes. I have a question about anthropogenic force.
Oh, really? Well, it's actually quite fascinating.
My colleague died trying to rescue you, and I'm sure you saw how well-trained he was, so I suggest you tell me who kidnapped you and why they let you go.
I have no idea what to talk...
I'm not supposed to say it, but it was...
For God's sake, I barely touched you.
Oh, man.
So don't worry about the context of that scene. I just wanted to play the clip to give you an idea of his British accent. I mean, it's better than Richard Gere's Irish accent.
Yeah, for sure.
It's certainly serviceable in a movie like this.
I'm glad they had him, you know. And Mark Hamill is a voice actor, and he's very good at that sort of thing. Yeah, his British accent maybe isn't the best British accent.
It's silly.
It's fun.
It's the right tone.
And chances are there's a lot of Star Wars fans that saw this movie. They love seeing Mark in anything. And he's such a nice guy. He's fun.
I love him.
I love Mark Hamill.
Yeah. But anyway.
Please be on our podcast, Mark Hamill. And talk about your favorite British movie.
Oh, good Lord. You know what? He probably has some.
He must.
Have you guys talked about Peeping Tom yet? Wow, you really do have a British accent.
Yeah, I'm actually from Surrey. I don't know if that's what people from Surrey sound like at all.
Anyway, guys, the force be with you and all that junk, yeah?
Yeah. See you later, cunts. Bye, Mark Hamill.
Wait, you're not dead?
Not yet.
Oh.
Death comes to us all, Brendan.
Let's not jinx this episode. But yeah, that's the cast. So anyway, continue what you were saying.
Oh,
Let's go to the basics.
Basics, yeah. So Taron Egerton's character is Eggsy.
Mm-hmm. Great British...
Great British name, wonderfully British. So his dad dies, and his middle-class mom degenerates into a drugged-out, lower-class mom. It's funny. It's a weird thing. That kind of was the first thing that kind of like made me kind of look funny at the perspective of this movie. There's this woman. She's this like, you know, stand-up middle-class lady. But then her husband dies, and so that means that she turns into, you know, like the most stereotypical lower-class mom who's got a shitty boyfriend living in a shitty apartment with an extra kid.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's where we should go first, because if we're talking about how that's kind of... We kind of look at the movie sideways a little bit when, like, you know, this guy dies and she immediately becomes, like, the worst...
Yeah, well, then she degenerates. And, I mean, I understand the dramatic desire to have that rivalry between him and the stepdad. Well, rivalry. The stepdad's a piece of shit.
But. I get the stepdad rivalry, but I don't know why they make her so broken.
Yeah.
It seems like now I'm going to say something, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry, right-wing media.
Hot take alert.
I don't think this movie does a very good job at female characters.
No, I agree. Outside of, like, well, Gazelle's cool, but that's because she's a fucking badass. And she
But
she doesn't get that much screen time, really. She's great in the few things she's in, but that character, there's not much to it.
So Gazelle as a villain, Sophia Boutella, she's badass and she's cool, but she's also a lackey.
Yeah.
Like ultimately, when you look at it...
Loyal,
I mean,
to the end lackey.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it, you've got the mother, who we already talked about. We've got Gazelle, who is ultimately a lackey to Sam Jackson's character. We've got Roxy, who, you know, you think, oh, this might be the one, at least the, you know, the most the best female character, but she gets pretty much written out of the finale.
Yeah, she serves a function, but we don't really get to see her stretch her acting legs that much. I mean, I do like her.
I like her. I like all these women. I just think their characters are pretty underwritten. And
she's
then,
probably the most written character in the movie.
And then the princess, who we need to talk about at the end, because that is...
Yes.
That is absurd what the function of her character is. I don't know, man.
Somebody played some Arrow Brothers the day before, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What were you going to say before we got into all that? So you're talking about the mother who just just completely deteriorates.
So he's kind of living in a shitty situation. He's clearly been growing up, like, you know, in a bit of a bad way. He's got friends, but they like kind of get into trouble, and, you know, he's been into some shit before, and he's got problems with people around the neighborhood, and ends up at the pub and runs into one of those guys, and they have a bit of a confrontation, and, you know, and then they steal his car. This other dude's car. They just fucking steal his Subaru.
Eggsy and his buddy steal it, yeah.
Yeah, and do some donuts and then take off and then have a hilarious fucking backwards chase with a police car through traffic. Again, this movie is just so balls to the wall. Like, even in this very beginning when we're just setting things up, we have to have this crazy action scene.
Oh, it's crazy.
But entertaining as hell. And yeah, so he ends up getting arrested and going to jail. A detail at the beginning of the movie we haven't mentioned yet is that the... that Colin Firth's character had said to the mother, like, hey, I'm so sorry your husband died. I can't tell you why.
Here's a medal
to remember him by. And there's a number on the back there. Say a code word and call me if you ever need anything. And she's just like, I don't want anything from you. Fuck off.
Yeah, I want my husband, you son of a bitch.
That's right. And that's understandable. But so...
Very emotional.
So, of course, young Eggsy has this medal around his neck. And when he's in prison, he thinks, maybe I should take advantage of this.
Try this code word. Yeah.
And it gets him out. And he meets Harry Hart. And they go to Kingsman Taylor's.
And thus the training begins.
And thus the induction begins, as yes. it were. Yes, he's bringing him into this cult. So let's talk about the Kingsmen for a sec. Who are the Kingsmen, Brendan?
Well, they are the Secret Service.
They are.
As a form of that. So in this movie, the Kingsman is sort of this underground, I guess, like, spy type thing. They're kind of like, I guess, what's the British...
MI5? MI6?
Something like that, but not run by government. Not known by government.
Problematic thing number two. Kingsman is an organization that was set up by a bunch of rich people who were dissatisfied with the way things were going, and in the name of doing good, in their view, they established this essentially rogue spy agency to go out and do their will.
So this also introduces the first of what I believe are a few times I felt like this movie has a bit of a conservative bent to it.
A little bit, yeah.
Weirdly, right?
Yeah.
Because we'll talk about the church scene later, because that's a huge thing we need to get into. But, like, there's so much stuff in this movie where I'm like, that's a weird take.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's part of, I think, the interesting fabric of this
And I don't
movie,
even
yeah.
I don't even know I don't I'm not saying Matthew Vaughn, because he's a writer director.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he necessarily feels that way. Yeah. I mean, he's adapting a comic book but written by a somewhat problematic guy.
Hey, I fucking love 300.
Well, that's not. Is that Mark Miller?
No, that's Frank Miller. But Frank Miller is also somewhat problematic, especially in his writings and stuff.
I would say Frank Miller more problematic than
yeah.
Mark Miller.
Oh, probably.
No relation, by the way.
No,
different spellings.
Yeah, exactly. Mark Miller with an A.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you spell Mark.
Fuck you.
Zing! That's what you come here for, folks. The comedy.
So this rogue spy agency, which is incredibly well funded and incredibly well dressed.
Yeah, by who though?
These rich people, I guess.
Oh, okay. Because
the I guess the line was that these rich people had a bunch of kids that then died in World War I, and so they didn't have any heirs, so they had all this money that they couldn't pass down to their kids, so they used it to establish the spy agency. And I bet you Kingsman has made some very lucrative investments over the many years that they've been around.
I mean, there's some lobbying going on.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I do think there is a moment, too, where like we get a moment during the whole recruiting phase where you know, Harry Hart or Colin Firth is trying to recruit Eggsy. Mm. Do you notice that he only gets... He gets pushed by those guys at the bar, and he only really goes over the deep end when they make like a gay comment at him. Like they say, like, oh, you can get a rent boy down the street, and that's when he finally goes, okay, I'm beating all these guys up. Oh, that struck me as odd too.
Yeah, it's weird that they would question his sexuality.
It just struck me as odd that they had to make that comment.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. This is 2014. It's not like this is like, you know, oh, it was the 90s.
And this initial fight scene, too, is another indicator of how fucking brutal this movie is going to be, because it starts off with him smashing.
Does he kill anyone? I don't think he kills anyone.
I don't think he kills anyone in this scene. But to be fair, we already saw the scene where Mark Hamill's character gets...
his head blown up.
Well, no.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, yes. But I don't know. Have we seen that yet? What we do see, though, is when his rescue attempt early on. We have the former Lancelot, is it Lancelot, show up and attempts to... rescue Mark Hamill from a bunch of these all uniformly bald thugs. I assume they're Russian because they're bald, I guess.
Yes.
And just fucking popping heads left and right. Just boom, 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 boom. Just execution after execution after execution. It was fucking brutal. And at that point, I'm like, oh shit. I thought this was just like a PG-13 comic book movie. No, sir. No, sir.
No.
This is fucking whoo.
And then he immediately gets sliced in half.
Yeah.
I
thought of Resident Evil, although in Resident Evil, that's a laser. That's the one good part of that movie.
That 3-minute scene is the only good part of that entire franchise.
Absolutely.
I watched all of those movies under lockdown, and I think it made me want to leave my house.
That's unfortunate. I hope that doesn't turn you off of ever playing those games, because the games are quite good. Some of them.
The games scare me. I'm like... legitimately tense playing those games. But yeah, no, exactly. That's what happens. He, everybody gets kind of sliced up. And sorry, where were you going to go with that?
Oh, I was just going to say that's a brutal fucking scene. I may have had a point. Where was I going with that?
I don't know.
We don't need points, man. We're just here to talk about movies, man.
We need points. We're all rounded.
That's the thing, though. And that's the thing about this movie, too, is that there's so much going on in this movie. It's hard to watch it and take notes because you look down for a second, come back up, and something fucking crazy is happening. Like,
yeah.
Woo!
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, so we should go over it, but maybe Sam Jackson. Okay, so Sam Jackson plays a character called Richmond Valentine, is that right? Yeah.
Sam Jackson, who's probably in his, like, 60s at this point, is wearing a ball cap like a young person.
Well, he's 72, and this was
7 years ago.
Well, yeah, we're in February, so we'll give him 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 66.
Yeah, 66.
But looking great.
Oh, I mean, yeah, Sam Jackson will never crack, as they say. He looks amazing.
I wasn't going to say it.
No,
But yeah, he plays the villain in this movie, which, of course, this is the fun twist, is that normally you see movies with American heroes, and often they're British villains, and in this case, we have a British hero with an American villain, so it's a fun twist.
Yeah, and he's definitely doing, he's definitely making a lot of choices.
He is. He has a lisp.
He has a lisp.
Kind of sounds, at first, he kind of made, he sounded a little bit like Ron Funches to me, although a little more, a little higher energy.
Yeah, he that's true. I never thought about that. He has a lisp in the movie, and he also can't stand the sight of blood or violence. Like, he's totally adverse to that.
Yeah.
Like, in that scene you mentioned with Mark Hamill, where all those guys get, like, shot, and then, you know, Gazelle, Sophia Boutella, comes in and slices the Lancelot dude in half, which is, to me, almost like the movie saying, like, this isn't James Bond.
No.
There's not going to take a James Bond guy to solve this mystery.
Eggsy is not going to get to have sex with this lady with fucking blade legs.
Although, you know, you never know.
You never know.
We'll talk about it. But yeah, after that, she covers everyone up with a sheet.
Yeah.
And makes Mark Hamill, like, hold the towels for her while she, like, you know, wipes it down and stuff. And then Sam Jackson comes in. So it's already, like, giving him a quirk.
Mm.
I actually just wanted, there's a clip of him on Good Morning America or the Today Show.
One of those morning, CBS This Morning, maybe. Who
One
knows?
Of those where he talked about coming up with this idea of his character having a lisp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting. He talks about a little bit of a, why he made that choice.
Help me out here, though. You are the villain in this movie.
I am. Okay. I am what's considered the villain in this movie.
This is actually, the New York Times kind of put its finger on it, writing about you, that your ability to imbue even the vilest characters, spouting the vilest words with a touch of humor, intelligence, and humanity is what makes you so special. And I guess that's true. I mean, it's like, this guy's really awful, but you don't hate him.
Well, you don't hate him because, I mean, he's a colorful character. He's very personable. In a way, he is smart. He does make you laugh. He's an interesting combination of several different things. And I gave him this interesting speech pattern because
he has a lisp. We just heard it. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted him to be sort of odd.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuttered when I was younger. So people dismiss me in an interesting sort of way because I stuttered. So I became smarter and better than them in other ways. So I think Valentine's had that same issue, that people dismissed him in certain ways until he became this billionaire and people realized he was a genius.
I love that.
Yeah.
I want to say I love that so much is that he went out and said, like, because Sam Jackson, like you heard in the clip, he said he stuttered as a kid. And people just kind of dismissed him in that way. Like, oh, you know, whatever. And that's such an interesting take by giving this character something that would have made people dismiss him early on.
Mm.
And we learned another conservative bent kind of in this movie is that he's an environmentalist.
Yes. which is why what makes him very interesting to me as a villain, because he's not a villain that is out and out like evil. He's not just,
no.
He's not Dr. No.
Well, those are the best kind of villains,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You gotta have an understanding,
like,
of their motivation.
He's a guy who's become very rich through the tech sector, and he's devoting a large chunk of his money to trying to figure out a way to combat global warming. The breaking point in this movie comes when he realizes, as far as he's concerned, that they've already passed the point of no return.
Yeah.
So the only way to deal with this, and actually this is funny because this ties into Mark Hamill's character, was it Dr. Arnold? Was that his name? Yeah, Dr. Arnold is subscribes to something called the Gaia Theory. And the Gaia Theory, I don't know it in depth, but I think it basically alleges the ideas that the Earth is sort of a living organism and we're just living on it. So with that logic, he says, okay, so clearly we're an infection on this planet. The only way we're going to cure this and or at least moderate this infection is to cull it. So we need to, it's funny because I was thinking about this the other day. There's an episode of Star Trek. I think it's called Return of the Archons.
Maybe? Yes, that's correct.
Shit, I can't remember. But this is like Ben Stiller's favorite episode of Star Trek, whatever it is.
As everyone knows.
Yeah, and in that one, they have something called the Red Hour, where everybody fucking goes nuts for like 12 hours and just fucking murders each other.
You know what? I think that's what it's called, because Ben Stiller has a production company called Red Hour Productions.
Yeah,
so
I can't remember if it's called Return of the Archons or if there's a different... I can't remember which episode it is, but that episode. Also calling back to movies I haven't seen, but The Purge, the idea of like... So yeah, so his plan, it turns out, is so yeah, he can't fix the Earth with money.
No.
But so what he does instead is he releases a free SIM card to anybody that wants it that gives them free internet access, free calling,
Anytime. All that. All the time.
Now, 2021, Jason looks back at 2014 movie and says, okay, it's 2021. I know that when you get something for free, you are the product. What is he trying to sell? Mm-hmm. Turns out it's chaos.
Yeah, because his basic plan here is that he will release a signal, a wave or whatever that goes to all
these... A neurological wave.
Yeah, that goes to all these phones that have the free internet, which obviously is going to be everyone.
Yes.
And they will just... lose all inhibitions, go absolutely nuts, beat the fuck out of everyone, and thin out the population. Because, like you said, his belief is that we need to thin out the population, which, I mean, we are overpopulated. I don't know if this is the way to go about it.
I think we should colonize the moon, but that's just me.
Jason, you and I tried that, remember? We ran into so many problems from...
It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And plus, it's a 7-day trip.
Yeah, I'll call Newt, ask him what he thinks.
Gingrich?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had some opinions on that.
Sure. Why not, Newt?
Call Come back to in. Like 2012.
That's what happens when you're an SNL fan. You have all these weird bits of news in your head that you just call back to. Yeah.
Yeah. People are like, "What Brendan. The fuck are you talking about?" That was a thing from January 28th to February 2nd.
You're like me when I was a child and got all my political news from the Royal Canadian Air Force.
That's the only place to get it.
So Sam Jackson, not necessarily a bad dude, but taking a bad dude's approach to this problem.
Yeah.
So, of course, the Kingsmen are not fans of genocide.
No, not in theory.
Not in theory. Well, that's to be seen. I mean, The King's Man is coming out soon, and that's set in the past, so there could be a lot of genocide in that.
That's the third one. Yes. There's already two of these movies. Yes. All three directed and written, I believe, also written by Matthew Vaughn.
And I also believe there's a TV show on the way as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I hope it's on some network where they can do the stuff they want to do.
Yeah, maybe ABC's not the place for The Kingsman, but we'll see.
Tonight, after an old episode of Home Improvement, the series premiere of Kingsman.
Tune in.
Special guest star, Richard Crenna.
Yeah, so...
Still alive?
I hope so. Okay. So the first kind of expression of this we get to see, of this evil plan, is he has to do a test, and they find a clue when Harry goes in to kind of recon the place, because he pretends to be somebody who's going to donate a bunch of money to him.
Yes.
To Sam Jackson's
because we should note that this movie does an interesting thing during this time, right? Is that we have Eggsy's training stuff going on. And normally, a lot of movies, I feel like the training sequences or the getting ready stuff takes a long time. Mm. And it does in this movie. It's like half the movie, if not more. But the strength of this movie, too, is that they have all this other stuff you're mentioning happening at the same time concurrently.
We're talking about the villain shit, but like there's all the training sequences and him getting ready to be an agent, we haven't even gotten into yet.
They're going back and forth, which is nice.
But so Harry gets a backstory as like some wealthy donor, and he goes, he's old money, and he goes and he wants to donate money to Sam Jackson, and he's trying to get intelligence while he's there, but he doesn't really see anything. He doesn't get a chance to really see anything. The only thing they come across is a brochure for a church that is identified as a hate group. So that's their one clue, that something must be involving that church. So, of course, he goes down to that church.
And, of course, it's weird because he's probably like, Sam Jackson, why would he be in ties with this hate group? He's an environmentalist, African-American man. Yeah. You know, it doesn't add up.
And as we later learn, the preacher of this church is more than willing to drop an N-bomb or two.
Maybe we should just listen. I want to play the clip. Actually, don't keep going, because I do want to play the clip of the sermon.
I want to hear some of the sermon. But yeah, he goes down to this church. He sits down in the pews, and there's lots of people there, and the preacher is giving a sermon.
And I just want you to listen, because they make this as hateful as possible.
This is them going cartoonishly all out, for sure. Although, maybe not that far off from some of them, I can tell you that.
And I say to you, bear witness. Watch the news. Watch the news. AIDS. Floods. The blood of the innocent spilled. And yet, there are those who doubt this is the wrath of God. Our filthy government condones sodomy, divorce, abortion. And yet, some still doubt this is the work of the Antichrist.
Want to talk about, so obviously we hear they're very much like, these are not good people. blah, blah, blah. I do want to talk about this scene in depth, though, because this is a very controversial scene. This caused a lot of controversy at the time. This is one of the most, just statistically, I think, this is one of the most violent scenes in any movie.
It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be.
It's shot beautifully. Like, the technical behind it is wonderful. Now, in this scene, like you mentioned, Colin Firth is going to this church. Hmm. This is where Sam Jackson is going to test, quote unquote, his wave or whatever, right? Yep. So he sets it off. And everyone in the church, including Colin Firth, because he doesn't want to actually kill people.
No. Like, not in this way.
Despite what these people are, he's not going to go and murder them, right?
Yeah.
But everybody just has that nerve that comes over them, and everybody starts, like, acting violent
now,
towards
this,
each other.
This all kicks off. He's starting to leave. So we had a great little scene where there was a woman beside him, and she was saying something, and he went on this long rant that ended with,
I have to go see my gay black boyfriend
Yeah, I go see my gay black boyfriend and have an abortion and whatever.
Yeah,
and then he's
yeah.
like... And hail Satan and have a lovely day. And he stands up and goes to leave, and she like follows after him, and she's like, he's a bad one, and blah, blah, blah. And then he turns around, and then the signal goes off and it starts getting into people's heads, and he fucking pulls his gun out and puts it to her head and blows, just fucking shoots her in the head, just executes her right there, and chaos ensues. Everybody's fighting everybody else. And Colin Firth, remember, is a Kingsman, so he has some incredible fighting skills and is just working his way through the room.
Yeah.
One at a time. Stab, stab, shoot, stab, back. Fucking throws a guy into a wall. We see his body bend in a fucked up way
we
as
see
he slams him into the wall.
Neck, like bend in.
Yeah.
So this scene, I remember at the time when I saw this movie, I remember the controversy about this scene coming out. I remember the articles about it, and I remember me thinking like, oh, it's another case of like people being like, oh, it's so violent. Yeah. Oh, we don't like violence.
Yeah.
But I think now I have a slightly different perspective on it.
Having seen it for the first time, I was a little shocked by how violent this scene was. And then they went to town on these right-wing fucking nut jobs that, for me as a person, through my view, I have no problems with this scene, like, morally, I guess, because it's like, oh, a bunch of assholes getting murdered. I don't mind that. But at the same time, it's like, he massacres these people. A lot of them kill each other, but he certainly kills the lion's share of them.
Yeah. My thing that makes this whole thing weird is the tone of the scene.
Yeah.
Because we clearly see that he does not want to do any of the stuff he's doing. This is, like, taking over his mind. It should be, like, fucking harrowing. Like, after this, he should be like, oh my god, what have I done? But they make it, but Matthew Vaughn, I think the weakness here is that Matthew Vaughn is just like, well, it's an action scene, it's fun.
He fetishizes it.
Yeah.
And interestingly, and I don't know if this is a specific callback or not, but you've seen The Devil's Rejects, right?
Yes.
Yes, at the end of The Devil's Rejects, we have that famous, amazing scene where they go down in a fucking hail of gunfire, although they don't because they're in a further movie.
Don't watch it.
Oh, is it bad?
Terrible.
That's a shame because I love Devil's Rejects. And House of a Thousand Corpses isn't bad either. But so they use Freebird, and I thought it was great. Like on a purely technical movie making level, it was a fantastic use of that sound.
Yeah.
And that song and that violence and everything. Like, it worked really well. And I don't know if it was specific calling back Devil's Rejects, but I got that same vibe. But man, it's so much. And this thing goes on for a while too.
It's just like, yeah, and like the tone is so weird for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching this and like, there are, like, Colin Firth is like shooting like people and shooting like females like point blank in the head, like stabbing them, punching them. It's brutal.
It is brutal. And yes, the tone of it from the way the Freebird solo, which is a fucking rockin' solo, right? The tone of it is almost celebratory.
Yeah.
And it feels like it should be darker for what's happening.
See, I get, now change the story a little bit.
Yeah.
Say these guys were like the evil organization.
Yeah. That would be different.
Fine.
But these people, as hateful and as shitty as they are, these are just regular people. They aren't involved in this whole thing. They're just, collateral. They're fucking collateral damage! In this situation.
I love how you go from 11 to 1. Yeah, the tone is all weird for me. And, like, I don't know if you know this, Jason, but a few years after this movie came out, Donald Trump was the president, of course, as we all know.
That.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
Nightmare world? Mm. Somebody posted, I don't think they ever really found out who it was, or it was just like a weird Twitter user, but somebody posted this scene and inserted Donald Trump's head over Colin Firth, and then everybody he's killing and brutalizing are like CNN, ABC, like media logos, and also like other politicians, like Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. It was very macabre.
Yeah, it's still happening in a church.
It was so brutal. Yeah, it was so brutal that even the Trump campaign was like, "No, yeah. get this away. Like, we do not endorse this. We do not like this." So I mean, even they were like, "This is horrible." And it just it at the time, also when that happened, people were just like, a lot of the response was, well, why was it perfectly fine when it happened in the movie when it was happening to church-going folks? I'm like, number one, they're supposed to be a hate group. This is not just like church-going folks.
Number two, they're all fictional.
And but I mean, you know, they have that argument where like, well, why are liberals okay with it when it's this? Number one, it's a hate group.
Yeah.
And number two, based on what I've read, people were not 100% okay with this scene, even when it originally happened, for the reasons we went on about.
Yeah, as a person who considers themselves an anti-theist, it's not even that I just am not religious. I actively think it's harmful.
Mm-hmm.
It's still shocking for me to watch this scene because it's not a shot against the religion itself. It's just murdering all these people that have families and lives and fictional jobs.
Exactly. Like, it's just weird. Technically... wonderfully well shot scene.
Oh, absolutely. Fantastic scene from start to finish. As
choreography,
an action scene.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, amazing. So much work went into this thing. It took them like a week to film it, as I understand.
Yeah.
I guess you could argue that from the perspective of this sort of liberal tech lord, that yes, that he maybe would angle at a church, perhaps somebody who's maybe more anti-theistic than I am, although it's never clear that he's specifically anti-theistic, but it's just, I can understand Sam Jackson's character being like, ah, fuck these people.
And again, it's another just time back into that weird thing where they made their villain an environmentalist. I know there's more to him than
remember that. Remember, too, the preacher said the N-word twice, okay? So I could see why Sam Jackson maybe doesn't like him.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying...
That's my word.
I'm not
Mine
saying,
alone.
Oh, by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, you have to see that Sam Jackson interview where he tells the interviewer, he's like, go ahead, say it. He says like, no, I can't do that. He's like, no, what word? Say it to me. Tell me. I'm like, don't fall for the bait.
No,
don't fall for that.
I like the interview where he's mistaken for Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh dear.
Oh poor. Say he's not happy about that.
Oh my god. So anyway, church scene aside, that scene also leads to Colin Firth's character's death because Sam Jackson is waiting outside. And he shoots him in the head, but looks away because he can't stand the sight of blood.
Yeah.
Reacts
realistically to some extent where he shoots him. He's like, oh God.
Is he dead? Sophia Boutella has that great deadpan line where it's like, yeah, that usually happens when you shoot someone in the head.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, Jason, that he's not dead.
Oh, because he does come back in the sequel?
And it's not a spoiler because it was literally advertised in the trailer. They do that bullshit thing that sequels do where they go back, they backtrack. They're like, well, we really want to get Colin Firth back, so we'll just say he didn't die.
He just got plugged in the head and then
you
went
see
into
him
a coma.
Get shot in the face. Like he is deader than dead. And yeah, it's bullshit. Anyway, just wanted to mention.
It's the same reason they blew up the Death Star in the first Star Wars, because they didn't know.
Right. They didn't know they were coming back.
That's right.
That's why they rebuilt it in the third one. They're like, Death Star again?
That's right, because if you reboot Star Wars, you put the destruction of the Death Star at the end of the third movie.
Yeah.
And I'm advocating for that.
Okay.
Reboot Star Wars. Come at me
again?
No, straight from the beginnings. New cast, new everything, do it.
Excuse me, I think you should write the three movies that just happened out of canon.
And every role would be played by a white man so that we can make the most money. Even Princess Leia.
Too many women. Too many women and minorities. Not in my Star Wars.
Prince Leo.
Prince Leo. DiCaprio.
Prince Leo. Into the garbage chute, flyboys.
Oh my god. What the hell were we talking about?
I don't know. Well, we were talking about that scene. We should probably talk a bit about what Eggsy's doing. We can't focus on Harry the whole time.
Oh,
but
that's
that fucking amazing scene. So we
amazingly have, problematic scene.
Yeah. So, of course, Eggsy is brought into this program. He's introduced to his fellow competitors. Only one is going to get a slot.
Guys, I apologize if we haven't talked about the female characters a lot. This movie doesn't talk about the female characters a lot.
We mentioned that earlier. Yeah, they're very... briefly used.
But Roxy is one of the
Roxy is one of the, she there's two women I think in the group.
Yeah, one ends up being a spy
and
she faked her death.
Fakes her death
for the purposes
of the exercise.
Of intimidating them or whatever.
But they pull what in Star Trek Starfleet Academy likes to pull on their students. They like to do psychological fucking tests on them. So they put them in the barracks, they all sleep for the night, but during the night they just dump a whole bunch of water in there, fill the whole room up, and are like, okay, go ahead and get out. And so most of them figure out that if you, I guess if you put a hose through a U-bend in a toilet, you can get air.
Yeah, it's like the shower heads.
Yeah. But Taron Egerton's character, Eggsy is more action-based, and he's trying to get the fuck out, and he's the one who figures out if they smash the two-way mirror, they can drain the water out and survive.
Did you get the sense, though, that, I don't know, this reminded me kind of Men in Black.
Hmm.
For the training sequence, just because it's Eggsy going for like the most, like everyone's going for like, you know, Men in Black when they're all doing their exams and they're trying to like write them on their laps and they're all awkward and everything. And Will Smith just drags the table over. Mm-hmm. That just reminds me of that a little bit, because Eggsy is like, okay, well, you all are getting air, but I'm going to look for the most quick, logical solution to this.
Yeah.
But
of course, the mistake they make is that they don't work together.
They don't work as a team, and that results in the fake death of one of them.
That's right. And they're all very sad.
Yeah.
So that actually then that ties into, we mentioned the body bags. Well, we didn't mention it yet, but one of the clips we have, the body bags. Would you like to hear about the body bags?
Well, this is how Merlin, Mark Strong, who for many years I thought was Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, he does look like a buff Stanley Tucci, doesn't he? Right. I thought the same thing.
He explains to the new recruits the process and brings out the body bags.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Merlin. You are about to embark on what is probably the most dangerous job interview in the world. One of you, and only one of you, will become the next Lancelot. Can anybody tell me what this is? Yes.
Body bag, sir.
Correct. Charlie, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Good. In a moment, you will each collect a body bag. You will write your name on that bag. You will write the details of your next of kin on that bag. This represents your acknowledgement of the risks that you're about to face, as well as your agreement to strict confidentiality, which incidentally, if you break, will result in you and your next of kin being in that bag. Is that understood? Excellent. Fallout.
So yeah, there's that scene, and then of course we get the scene where they all, there's three of them left at some point, and it's like Eggsy, this guy Charlie, and Roxy, and they're all told to go hit on this blonde girl at the bar. And me, of course, watching this at the time, I was like, ooh, Roxy's gonna hit on her, eh? I was like 17. No, I wasn't. I was 27. Oh, good lord, I'm old. Jason!
Oh, you poor thing.
But yeah, so they all like go to hit on her, and they've all been drugged, and then they have this simulation. We don't know it's a simulation, where they're tied up on the tracks, like a subway.
I thought it was, yeah, because at first I'm like, wait, so their job is to fuck this girl? That's their objective? And then of course, yeah, so they sway it and it goes the other way. But yes, they're tied to a train track.
Yeah, and the task is they see if they'll give anything up, basically. And Eggsy does not, and then turns out it was just a test. Roxy does not, but Charlie is only too quick to give up everything, so he's kicked out.
That's what happens when you're an upper-class twit in these sorts of situations.
Yeah, and then we see him later as like one of Sam Jackson's party-goer guys.
Yeah, because he's from a rich family, and he was one of the people that had access to this safe house that Sam Jackson set up.
Oh, we didn't mention that whole thing as well, because Sam Jackson, not only is he going to send out this signal that makes everyone beat each other up, but he's also getting politicians and people on his side, including, I swear to God, it was Barack Obama. I swear. Because they have a scene where Sam Jackson is talking to someone, and then they pan out, and it's the White House is right there. And the guy that he's talking to,
the back of his head does look like Obama.
It does look a lot like Obama, whose head we see blow up later, which caused another little bit of a thing. Because they were like, why are you making it look so much like the real president?
So that's the other thing, too. So yeah, he brings these rich people to this place, but on the agreement that they put a chip in their head.
Chip in their head, which they don't know that he can just explode if he wants.
Yeah, he can battle royal them. He can just blow their fucking heads off.
But the chip is meant to protect them from this signal.
Yes.
And not make them go insane. And of course, he's picked like the rich and the wealthy and, you know, the powerful. Which, again, is another weird thing that we make him this environmentalist guy. It's like, yeah, but he still only really cares about the rich.
Exactly. The people he knows and relates to.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been rich for too long.
This is a conservative film, Jason. To some extent. Yeah, so we talk about the training. I want to talk about the scene between Sam Jackson and Colin Firth when they have their first meeting. They have their first meetup, and they're talking about old spy movies. I just want to play that for a second.
All right.
You like spy movies, Mr. DeVere?
Nowadays, they're all a little serious for my taste. The old ones. Marvelous.
Give me a far-fetched theatrical plot any day.
The old Bond movies. Oh, man. Oh, when I was a kid, that was my dream job. Gentleman spy.
I always felt the old Bond films were only as good as the villain. As a child, I rather fancied a future as a colorful megalomaniac.
What a shame we both had to grow up. Bon appetit. Just give me a couple of days to think over your proposal. I have my people get in touch with yours, and it's all good.
And thank you for such a happy meal.
So, this movie takes an interesting point of view on that, because we also have Michael Caine, who plays Arthur. He's like the head of the Kingsmen, who has a very like traditionalist viewpoint. Ultimately, we find out he's a turncoat.
Yes.
So kind of straying from that. But we also have Colin Firth, who basically says, like, don't stand in the way of progress. Mm. Which I feel like we talked about on a recent movie at some point. Like some recently.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. But anyway, so it makes me think.
Oh, maybe Man in the White Suit to some extent?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was Man in the White Suit. That was last week.
Yeah.
but it's interesting because, like, what do you think the point of view of this movie is? Like, do you think it's like, you know, this is obviously a movie that goes above and beyond what these movies usually are, these spy movies. This is balls to the wall, like you said, nonstop. But Sam Jackson, you know, is reminiscing about the old spy movies.
Yeah, about the sillier ones. I assume they're both thinking of Moonraker.
The only spy movie for me.
Yeah. But yeah, the comment on the modern James Bond movies being much darker and grittier and grounded than traditionally they were.
I never thought about that too. Yeah, they are. They do kind of make the point that maybe those ones aren't their favorites.
Well, and then of course later on, so let's mention briefly the dog. Taron Egerton, all of them have to have dogs at some point to take care of.
And he has an adorable little pug.
He has an adorable little pug that he calls JB. And James Bond, Jason Bourne, nope. Jack Bauer.
Yes.
But you think about like the newer Bond movies, you think about the Bourne movies, very gritty, very realistic, and then Jack Bauer, 24, also that way too. So he's kind of in that modern, kind of more gritty thing as a comment against those older Bond movies and the sillier stuff that has been done over the years. So even Austin Powers, I suppose, which is silly.
I guess Eggsy kind of takes the more modern viewpoint on that.
Well, and that's the thing. And interestingly, on the Kingsman website, as I understand, there's a list of what the gentleman's code is of how to be a Kingsman, and Eggsy follows none of them.
Did you sign up?
No, I read it on Wikipedia, I think.
Are you going to become a Kingsman?
I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
I would love to have a bespoke bulletproof suit.
Yes.
Also want to mention about the dog, though.
Yes, what happens to that dog?
Well, the one of the final tests is that he goes to meet Michael Caine, and Michael Caine hands him a pistol and says, kill the dog.
Now, when you saw this, Jason, because you were watching this movie for the first time, did you think this is a legit thing he had to do?
I feel like I've seen something like this in other movies.
Okay.
The psychological test of forcing you to, like, raise a dog and bond with it and then murder it. Like, yeah, that seems like to be the sort of thing, a test to see if you can follow orders despite your emotions and do what needs to be done. And then also the fact that we later learned that there was blank in the gun.
Yeah.
And, of course, Eggsy won't do it.
But Roxy does.
Roxy does.
But, of course, the dog does not die.
Dog doesn't die.
Yeah.
And we learn that later when he shows him, when Colin Firth shows him his dog, who he has stuffed on a shelf. And he's like, you murdered your dog and stuffed him? And he's like, no, he died of pancreatitis 11 years ago.
Yeah.
There's a blank in the gun, you idiot. So he blows his chance at being a Kingsman based on that. He won't kill the dog.
As would I.
Yeah, it'd be a really hard thing to do, for sure. Depending, I guess, on how much you wanted it. Clearly, Roxy wanted it more.
I would not be able to do it.
Yeah.
Straight up. That would be the end of my, that would be the end of my training.
Yeah. So what were we talking about before the dog?
No, we're talking about the whole thing with the old spy movies.
Yeah, the old spy movies. So yeah, and this movie feels like almost so. This yeah, I was gonna say, so we have these gritty spy movies that are kind of the thing right now, from Casino Royale, Bourne, and 24. I guess the TV show, but like, and Mission Impossible, even to some extent. Like it's
yeah,
not
I think those
it's
are
out there, but it's not like Moonraker.
Yeah, I think Mission Impossible though, out of all of those, I think more is in the more towards the camp.
Sure. This movie feels like a total reaction against those sorts of movies, though.
Yeah.
It's going completely the other way. It's going completely over the top, completely bombastic. But again, not in a dumb way like Moonraker, but in an entertaining way.
Right. Moonraker, we're taking you to task.
Taking you down, Moonraker. You and your fucking pigeon double take.
don't try to tell me that's not the best moment in the Bond franchise.
It's certainly the best moment in that movie.
One more thing I want to talk about that actually this ties into the ties to the old Bond movies is, don't you find that like Sophia Boutella, who plays Gazelle, she's like the henchman or whatever, she's kind of a callback to those like Bond henchmen, like
if Jaws or Odd Job. Or
Jaws is the one I thought of.
Although I can say she certainly gets more dialogue, I think, than in just about any of them.
Yeah, I think what just reminded me was the whole like thing where her legs, she had like those swords on her legs. It just reminded me of Jaws a little bit.
Yeah.
In the sense that the henchman with like the extra thing, you know, like, although unlike Grace Jones, she does not sleep with Eggsy.
No, no. And it's unfortunate, but understandable. That would be a, that could be a brutal, brutal session.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Eggsy gets his, we'll get there.
She gets a lot of fun stuff to do though.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Physicality.
Oh yeah, so much cool fucking leaping around and slicing and shit. Like it's entertaining as hell.
I do kind of dig her relationship with Sam Jackson's character. Like we talk about the church scene, of course, a lot. But when that's happening, Sam Jackson is like watching. There's footage he has set up, and he's like, "I can't watch this," like because he can't watch violence or blood, right? And so she's watching for him, and she has that whole thing where she's like, "Oh, I never thought it was going to work on anyone or on everyone." And then the later scene where he ends up shooting Colin Firth, and you know she's like, didn't it feel good to do that? And he's like, no, it didn't fucking feel good. I just killed someone. And she's like, you just killed like 200 people in that church. He's like, but I didn't do that. Yeah. So I think their back and forth is kind of fun.
I would be kind of interested. I mean, I don't know if the comics delve into it at all. I'd be interested to know what her backstory is, to know why she's so loyal to Sam Jackson.
God damn it, Jason. Do you work for George Lucas? Get me that prequel.
I'm working on a Daxter Jaxter feature-length film. It's going to come out in 2024.
My next Star Wars film is going to feature the backstory of a character you all know and love, Sebulba.
George, it's Michael Eisner. I know I don't work for Disney anymore, but I got to tell you, you don't own that. You can't do that.
I'm just going to do it anyway.
All right. Well, good luck. If you need help, I know a lawyer. His name's Rudy.
I heard he's great, but I don't want to slander George like that.
George, you're slowly turning into Jimmy Stewart. I don't know what's going on.
I heard he's great, but could I get a Coke Zero?
You want sugar in that?
Oh, I'm just kidding. It's just me.
Aw, Jimmy. I love you.
Oh, gotcha. Hey, fellas, how you doing? You're recording another episode of the podcast?
Look, I got to go have a power lunch, but reserve me a spot in Republican Heaven, because I'll probably be there soon.
Get Eisner off the phone. I'm talking to these fellas right here.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye. How you doing, fellas?
Jimmy, why did you interrupt our podcast with your dumb bit?
I don't know. It was a Kingsman Secret Service. It got me all jacked, and my 11-inch penis is hard as a rock.
That's a fact I didn't know.
Well, you know, it's a Jimmy's hog. So, what you drinking there, boys?
Look, why don't you go back up and compare your dick with Uncle Milty and leave us alone, Jim? We'll come back to you when we need you, but we're in the middle of something.
He keeps stealing all my best bets.
I know. He only takes out enough.
Anyway, I'll get going. I just want to say that I also watched this movie and, that church scene, eh? Doodles!
Jimmy Stewart, ladies and gentlemen. Always down for some fun.
Yes.
So this was a movie we watched.
Wait, are we just starting the episode? So I don't even, like, we talked a little bit about the plot. I don't even know if we need to talk about that much. But it ends like you think it ends.
Well, we talk about the ending scene. Of course, we have the great action scene. They get in that cool plane that apparently is VTOL. It looks like a Learjet or something, but it's VTOL.
Oh, and they kind of write Roxy out of the finale because her whole thing is that she's sent up to disrupt the satellites.
They give her a special big girl's job.
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And she disrupts the satellite. She blows it up, but she also like kind of fails in a way, but you know, lands safely. But then she's just kind of away from the action.
Her last act really in the movie is to call Eggsy's mom and say, "Hey, by the way, you don't know me, but you should lock your baby in the bathroom and put the key in with her."
And Eggsy's mom was like, "All right,
okay, that's all right, I'll do that."
Well, because of this Wi-Fi signal is going to send everyone insane, and the mom almost murders that baby with an axe.
She fucking Jack Torrance's that door. She is going through with a fucking knife trying to get to that baby to kill it, and that poor baby sits there and cries.
Jason, I just realized the other character we have to talk about is the princess.
Yeah, the princess. Well, let's just finish. So we'll talk about the princess, the Swedish princess. Okay, is with the Swedish prime minister. They want her on board. She refuses to go along with all
this. Is he Swedish?
Yes.
Because he says he's a Republican.
I mean, Swedish Republicans, maybe. Okay. I don't know. But he's the guy that's on the laptop that Taryn hacks.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's a Swedish prime minister. He's there with the Swedish princess, and she won't go along with it, so
she won't go along with this whole plan of the Wi-Fi thing, making everyone go crazy and saving the rich.
So in wonderful James Bond fashion, Valentine has this fucking... Or is it Valentine or Valentino?
Valentine.
Valentine. Valentine has this, like, lair carved into the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
with a plane runway that is a cave, which I gotta respect any pilot that can thread that fucking needle. But yeah, so, and she is locked in a prison that is, you know, rock prison underground because she won't comply with everybody else who won't comply. All the rich and elite people that he figures he might need, but he doesn't want to kill.
Yeah.
So it puts them in there. And so, yeah, so they show up and they need to get in. They need to hack the system and stop this from happening. And it eventually ends up with Eggsy murdering a lot of people and then getting into a wonderful fight with Gazelle that eventually ends in her death.
Yeah, because he kills her with that little poison knife in his shoe.
Yeah, which I thought, oh, man, Kingsman, yeah, you got all this stuff about being a gentleman. You poisoned somebody. That's cold. It's a slow death. It's effective, but poisoning was banned by the some of the earliest war crimes conventions in the world, using poison bullets and shit.
It's
that is a war crime, Brendan.
It's Margaret Thatcher's murder squad.
Margaret Thatcher. We stopped the assassination of Margaret Thatcher. Oh, I don't think everybody will thank you for that.
There is that line. Hey, that's a great line. Let me chew that one in, I guess.
And that's the other thing, too, is there's a little bit of class conflict in this movie, too, between, you know, Taron Egerton's clearly from a lower class place at that point, and the Kingsman has this veneer of aristocracy, so it's understandable why he kind of doesn't trust them at first. They do seem a bit uppity. So anyways, at the end of the movie... Yeah, he kills everybody. There's all this death going on. And then he fucking... they manage to stop this before it happens. And he... using one of Gazelle's legs, he fucking does a full javelin throw and stabs Sam Jackson in the back with it. And he falls down to the floor and we get a great moment where he goes, aren't you going to say one of those...
puns.
One of those great puns before I die? And he's like,
that's not that kind of movie, which is a callback to a line Sam Jackson says to
as a friend of mine said, it's not that kind of movie. And he's like, ah, perfect. And then he dies happy.
Yeah.
So he gets a happy death. He gets the line he wants,
but pun intended.
So earlier when we saw him run by the princess,
Eggsy,
he stopped, he checked to see she was in. She's like, let me out of here. And he's like, okay.
I'll save you. And she's like, I'll give you a kiss if you save me.
And then
later on he says, I have to go save the world. And she's like, I'll do more for you than a kiss if you save the world.
She literally says, I'll do it in the asshole.
Yeah. Which is cut in some DVD releases of this movie. Not on Disney Plus, baby.
Nope.
It's in there in its entirety. That anal sex joke on Disney Plus is right there for you. Yeah, she's doing it in the asshole. And then the end of the movie, he comes back with, like, wine or whatever, and we just see a close-up of her butt, and Merlin going, oh, dear, because he can see it on camera.
You see a little more than her butt, my friend, if you look close.
That's true. So, I mean, we talk about female representation. I think that might be the worst one.
I think that was the best representation in this movie. Oh, Jason. Andrew Dice Clay. Oh, that bitch, she had a clock in her room and showed her ass. Oh, fuck that mouse.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, jetpack.
I hope so. But yeah, no, I think that is the worst one. Because, I mean, it's essentially she's boiled down to she is what the hero gets.
Yes, yes. It was very much that she is the reward for his good actions at that point.
And it's a weird thing, too, where it's like, ladies, you don't have to make this promise to anyone.
True. But at the same time, I suppose you could argue it is a twist on the classic, like, formula. Because, you know, James Bond, when he gets the girl, they, like, have a kiss and the camera pans away. She literally is like, let's do it in the asshole. And you see her ass. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I respect that. Just it's like, well, fuck it. Let's just blatantly show what's going to happen. Let's not fuck around. Let's not do any of this horseshit 60s fucking pull away crap. My friend, we're going to do this right. And he did. And like it or hate it, it's there.
It is. It's there, right in front of you.
Right in front of your fucking face.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That's Kingsman. Jason, maybe at this point we should take a break.
Sure. And before bits and bobs?
Come back. Yeah, we'll take a break. Come back with your bits and bobs. Is the tradition of what we've done for the last few months.
Look, I don't pay attention to all this. You're the producer. I'm just the talent.
So we'll be right back.
Age of Radio.
There's a man who's got some bips and bobs.
That's me.
Jason's got some bits and bobs for you.
You'll see.
Well, every bit and bob, an interesting thing you'll learn. And if you don't believe him, he'll put you in an urn.
Yeah, I will burn you alive.
Secret bits and bobs, Jason's bits and bobs. And take
Give
away
your number
and take away your name. Now we just went to the real song.
Did you ever think that he was singing Secret Asian Man?
I did every time.
And how do you hide time. That? That's my question.
I wrote my first bit in Bob, by the way, is Michael Firth. Colin Firth, it reminds me of Michael Caine in his performance.
Yeah. Yeah, he's clearly watched Ipcress or Bullet to Beijing or something beforehand.
Yeah, the made-up movie, yeah. Bullet to Beijing.
Wasn't that one of the ones? Wasn't he in one of the TV ones, something like that?
Oh, maybe it was called that. I could be full of shit.
So, Sweet Dire Straits and Cool Titles. We talked about that, but you can never go wrong with Money for Nothing and the Chicks for Free.
Yep.
When he gives him that medal, it's only a brief scene. He hands it to him, but all I could think of was Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction handing him the fucking watch.
He hit it in his ass.
This is from your dad's ass, this medal.
There's one scene where there's a bunch of holograms of all the angels. What is wrong with me? There's one scene at the big table where they have holograms of all the agents sitting there, and I got so much white guy face blindness.
Yes,
like I was like, at first I thought, is this supposed to be the same person?
They all look like Michael Caine in 1965.
I would have loved it if they just put like different versions of Michael Caine from different movies in there.
By the way, love their glasses. I want a pair of those with the full-on heads-up display. That's fucking cool. One of these days. I wrote down Jesus finger. I don't know what that means.
Don't know. I wrote down that there's a scene where Eggsy is joyriding and they see a fox and he purposely moves out of the way to avoid hitting it,
aww,
which is a nice little foreshadowing of how he won't kill the dog.
He likes animals.
Yeah.
Oh, what a guy.
It's a real save the cat moment.
Just mentioned Michael Caine. We haven't talked a lot about Michael Caine in this movie, but he's Michael Caine. He's great. He's wonderful to see there.
His whole performance is just sitting at that table,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, it was clear they shot it in a day or two, but it was fine. I was glad to have him there because he's so good. And the fact that he was in Austin Powers and now he's in this, it's like he's spy royalty because Sean Connery was an asshole and was done with acting.
Jason, maybe fuck you for being done with acting. Well, he's an asshole for other reasons, too.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's a little bit of a lengthy scene, but maybe we should hear that scene because we didn't talk a lot about Michael Caine, like you said. Maybe we should hear the scene where Eggsy discovers that Michael Caine is on the take. And tricks him.
Rare bits in Bob's clip, folks.
Can you guess what this is?
I don't have to. Harry showed me. You click it, I die. I thought that brandy tasted a bit shit.
Bravo.
Valentine won you over. Somehow.
Once he explained, I understood.
When you get a virus, you get a fever. That's the human body raising its core temperature to kill the virus. Planet Earth works the same way. Global warming is the fever. Mankind is the virus. We're making our planet sick. A cull is our only hope. If we don't reduce our population ourselves, there's only one of two ways this can go. The host kills the virus, or the virus kills the host. Either way,
the result is the same. The virus dies.
So Valentine's going to take care of the population problem himself.
But if we don't do something, nature will. Sometimes a culling is the only way to ensure that the species survives. And history will see Valentine as the man who saved humanity from extinction.
And he gets to pick and choose who gets culled, does he? All his rich mates, they get to live, and anyone he thinks is worth saving, he's keeping them safe, whether they agree with him or not.
And you? In Harry's honor, I am inviting you to be part of a new world. It's time to make your decision.
I'd rather be with Harry. Thanks.
So be it.
The problem with us common types is that we're light-fingered. Kingsman's taught me a lot, but sleight of hand.
Yes, they're founder members.
I had that down already.
You dirty little fucking prick.
Yes, we got it.
I just wanted you to hear,
you dirty fucking prick.
So in that scene, we should kind of explain a little bit, but basically Michael Caine has set up to poison Eggsy with this device where it's not poison unless he pushes the button on this little device.
On the pen, yeah.
On the pen. But Eggsy, knowing full well ahead of time that something is up, has switched the glasses, and Michael Caine has drank his own poison and then killed himself.
Good movie death for Michael Caine.
Yeah, and we were talking about during the clip, but you were pretty surprised that he turned, right?
Yeah, I was, but at the same time, it makes sense that, you know, that character could turn, but like,
and maybe
this
is
not in the movie very much, you know, he was there for a day, so yeah.
Like, and maybe this is the movie's way of acknowledging leaving the past behind a little bit.
Ipcress is dead, long live Kingsman.
Right.
Or I should say...
Because Ipcress doesn't have any ridiculous scenes, certainly not any light shows or anything.
What's Austin's father's name?
Oh, I don't even know. Austin's father.
Yeah, in Austin Powers.
Yeah, I said it.
She shat on a turtle.
It's a great Michael Caine performance.
Thank you.
Well, that and the Michael Caine performance from that movie.
I thought you were thanking me for my impression.
I'm also thanking you.
Okay.
Continue with your bits and bobs.
Bits and bobs.
My Fair Lady.
Oh, so, yeah, he makes a reference to My Fair Lady. He, like, goes through all these British movies.
Eggsy does.
Or what?
Oh, yeah, no. Colin Firth goes through, what does he say? He's like, I'm seeing my best friend's wedding. No, he says, like.
Oh, you ever see a Pretty Woman? Mm. And then he goes through, like, all these, like, kind of romantic, and then he says, oh, you mean, like, My Fair Lady.
And he's surprised, and he's surprised that Eggsy knows what that is.
You're full of surprises, I think he says something.
Yeah,
like
because
that.
He basically, Eggsy is like, oh, you teach me how to speak proper.
Yeah, exactly. Eggsy gets Spocked.
Go on.
So in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
I think this is the most Star Trek mentions we've had in an episode.
I will try to get as many as I can. So in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, there is an incident where a torpedo is fired at a Klingon vessel, and Kirk and McCoy go to the ship to try to help out because it's thought that the torpedo came from their ship, but they don't know. They didn't do it. They want to go help out and see if anybody's hurt. So before they leave, Spock puts his hand on Jim's shoulder and is like, we'll be in touch, which is kind of weird because Spock doesn't usually touch people because Vulcans have a telepathic thing. They don't usually do that. Mm-hmm. And then later we learn that he put a tracker on Jim's back so that they could keep track of where he was because they could take it to Rura Pente, the prison colony. Eggsy gets Spocked in this movie because
Harry
walks up to him before he leaves. He puts his hand on his shoulder. And my thought was he's putting a device on his shoulder. There's the only reason he would touch him is he's putting a device on his shoulder. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. But not only is this a tracking device, it has a microphone in it.
Yep.
So when Stepdad gets in his face, fucking the microphone comes on. He's like, back the fuck off, guy. And or this is going to be a problem. And Eggsy's able to leave. So I thought that was really cool. Again, don't know if it was a direct callback to Star Trek VI, but I'd like to think so. Man in Black has the device that wipes people's memory. What was it called?
Neuralizer.
A neuralizer. In this movie, they just have a fucking drug. They just shoot a thing into your neck and you forget stuff.
Oh, but you have to set it to, like, amnesia. It has an amnesia setting. Because I feel like there have to have been some slips of the thumb, though, where they went to set it to amnesia. It's like, ah, damn death. Sorry, man. Didn't mean to kill you.
Yeah.
Also, Sam Jackson serves this, like, elegant meal. And in my 2021 mind, I can't see anything else now, knowing what has happened in politics. Because he serves them, it's this big thing, and they take the dish off, and it's McDonald's. And all I thought was Trump.
Yeah.
Trump serving all those, like, all that fast food to those, like, sports teams or whatever.
I like when he says, I'll have the Big Mac. And he's like, oh, good choice, but I think the double cheeseburger is the best option.
Like, that's a pretty
good way. How much does McDonald's pay for this?
I was going to say, that's a pretty good way to do it, though.
Yeah.
McDonald's is going to pay you.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, like, sidebar, Donald Trump, you're giving athletes fast food. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, come on, man. That's
the only bad thing he did, though.
Only bad thing. So when they get into Kingsman, Merlin actually threatens them that if they reveal what's going on here, not only will he kill them, he'll kill their families.
Well, yeah, that body bag scene.
Yeah, classic Nazi technique.
Wow. I do like the little character detail of when Harry is showing Eggsy all the little gadgets We actually get like a Q scene, like James Bond,
yeah.
Showing him all the little gadgets and stuff. Eggsy tries to nick one of them.
Yeah.
Like he definitely pockets one and, you know, he doesn't put it back.
Fucking lighter grenade.
Yeah. He quickly tells him to put it back. But like, it's a nice little character detail.
At one point, they are able to track Valentine through an IP address through, I think, the device that they get a hold of. And it's like, this guy's a tech mogul. He can't mask his fucking IP. He didn't use a VPN or something?
Are you talking about Sam Jackson?
Man, if we were sponsored by NordVPN, this would be the right time to segue into an ad.
Hold on, are you talking about...
Yeah, no.
No, but it does mask his IP.
Well, no, the Kingsmen track him. And they say they tracked him via his IP.
Oh, because I thought earlier in the movie they said they tried to do that, but his IP was like...
Well, maybe he made a mistake or something.
It was coming from his corporation.
Yes.
Which they said could be millions
could be
of
millions,
employees.
Yeah. I like when they're, so yeah, again, in that scene when he's showing off all the gadgets and stuff, he gives him the shoes and he says, do it like a German or something. And he does the like fucking Hitler salute and mustache. He's like, no, and he clicks his heels and the thing comes out, right?
Yeah. He wants him to click his heels, not do the Nazi Germany.
But the line I love is he says, in the old days, there was also a phone in there, mm-hmm. which is a callback to Get Smart.
Okay.
I had the shoe phone.
Okay.
Which again, I probably said this before, but my dad for many years called cellular phones shoe phones. Dad, you may very well be listening. It's true. I remember. I like that they describe. So when they're going to head to the base and deal with Sam Jackson, they get Lancelot to, what's her name? Knox?
Roxy.
Yeah. So they get Roxy. It's like, oh, we have this device, this jetpack thing. It's from the Reagan era, from the Star Wars program, which I don't really understand because the Star Wars program would have been a series of satellites that were able to use lasers to destroy incoming missiles.
You don't remember the jetpacks he built?
Remember the jetpacks for that, but still thought it was a fun reference.
Clearly, you don't remember the best Reagan years.
Oh, at one point, when Taron Egerton is running through the cave, murdering guys left and right, all the henchmen.
Yeah.
He grabs one guy and does a legit goddamn German suplex to him. He full on flips him over and fucking kills him.
We gotta say, too, we didn't mention this enough. Taron Egerton, he is holding his own in this movie. Because
he's great.
Look at all the acting heavyweights, Michael Caine, Sam Jackson, Colin Firth, Mark Strong, all these, Mark Hamill in his brief appearance, but all these big name actors, and he is not the weak link. Like he's not a weak link at all.
It would be very easy for him to be kind of this low key, you know, just not standing out amongst these guys. But you're right. He absolutely stands out, holds his own and makes his name.
And I mean, this leads to a lot of it. I mean, he almost won an Academy Award for Rocket Man. They played Elton John, so there you go.
There we go.
And then he was in Robin Hood.
Again, folks, that cave runway is insane. I would love to see a pilot, what they actually thought of that, if that would even be possible to land a plane that accurately inside that tiny little fucking cave opening.
Pilots, at us.
All you pilots that listen to us while you're flying, first off, stop listening to podcasts while you're flying. The tower might have something to
say. Jason, don't do that. I want the listenership. We get paid by the ad revenue, baby.
That's right. So, you know what? Just play it in the background. You don't have to listen to it. Play it.
Put it on mute. And then listen to it later.
Hook it into the PA, play it for the people on your plane.
No. I want all of them to individually listen to it on their phones.
That's true. We want the numbers.
I'm in it for the money, baby.
All right, so exploding heads. Let's talk about that.
Okay, well, let's talk about... So we talked about the chips that people have in their necks and how Sam Jackson can just blow them up if he wants to.
Yeah, and I like that at one point he has to say, I wouldn't put one of those things in my own neck. Like, yeah, obviously. Like, why would anybody think that he would?
But in this scene, basically Eggsy is cornered, Merlin is cornered, and they come up with the idea let's try to hack into the system that controls these mechanisms for the head explosions. And I will say right now, you should seek out this clip. If you don't watch the movie, you should seek out this clip. Just search Kingsman head explosions and you'll see it. But basically what happens is they set it off and everyone's head starts exploding and to the tune of this wonderful music.
It reminds me a little bit of the end of V for Vendetta when they're blowing up Parliament and the 1812 Overture is playing. It's got a very similar vibe.
I need to go back and watch that movie again.
So let's listen to this. You're going to love it. Oh, yeah. Wow.
So seek out that clip because it is graphic.
It's fantastic.
But basically, it's like fireworks.
Yeah.
Everyone's head is popping off. And then, of course, including President Barack Obama.
That is an interesting implication for that world. So the idea is that Sam Jackson brought all these elites together. He has them all in one place. He got them all chipped. That goes off. It kills pretty much the elitist of the elite class in the world.
Oh.
All of a sudden, you have an immense amount of wealth that is no longer possessed by a bunch of people. That could be the revolutionary thing that this movie leads to.
You say you want a revolution.
Well, you know, you gotta blow up some fucking heads.
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
It's not in the Constitution. Well, you know. And then, of course, there's a mid-credit scene where he comes back and assaults the stepdad and a bunch of other people.
Exactly.
Much like Harry did earlier.
Which is good because that was something that was coming the whole movie that never got paid off in the course of the main body of the movie, the stepdad, because the stepdad really needed to be punched. He does a kind of a replay of Harry and using the umbrella to smash the mug into the face. And then it cuts away before the full fight.
I do want to talk a little bit about the background of the movie. So Mark Miller wrote the comic. Matthew Vaughn, basically Mark Miller and Matthew Vaughn were just hanging out at a bar discussing spy movies.
Wait, Matthew Vaughn of Layer Cake fame?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they were just talking about spy movies and saying like, oh, the genre's gotten so serious over the years. So there you go. Mm-hmm. They were clearly against that. And they really just wanted to do a fun one.
Yeah.
And to have the time to make this movie, Matthew Vaughn took a huge risk because he dropped out of directing X-Men Days of Future Past.
Which, in retrospect, was the correct move.
No.
I didn't see that movie.
No, that's the good one. That's one of the good ones.
Well, I really liked Kingsman.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. but I mean, that movie was highly successful.
Yes.
So it was a risk to take.
Was that the second X-Men movie he dropped out of? Because I'm pretty sure he was supposed to direct X-Men 3 at one point.
I don't know. All I know is that they brought in highly problematic director Bryan Singer for X-Men Days of Future Past.
I was going to say they brought in highly problematic director Brett...
they're both.
What's his name? Brett?
Brett Ratner?
Brett fucking Ratner.
I think
Brett Ratner.
I think...
Fuck you!
Based on what I've heard, Singer's worse, but yeah. Ratner's no angel for sure.
No. Singer is a more talented director at the end of the day.
Yes. The usual suspects above anything Brett Ratner's directed. Rush Hours be damned.
Yep.
Because everyone, when they watch Rush Hour, they're like, oh, if anything, the directing stands out.
Yeah, fuck you, Brett Ratner.
I just want to take the time. The official position of For Screen and Country is fuck you, Brett Ratner, and also go fuck yourself, Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
And you know what? Kevin Spacey eats shit.
Sure.
Okay, so anyway.
You watch out, Shatner. We're coming for you next.
He's going to die before anything happens. Matthew Vaughn basically said it was a really tough decision to do that. But he said if he did not do it, then somebody else would wake up and do a fun spy movie. And then he said, quote, then I would have written a bloody screenplay that no one would want to make.
Absolutely.
Because it would have already been done.
Yeah. This movie is sort of the first, I don't know, has there been any sort of like out there spy movies since this one? Because before really there was Austin Powers as far as that sort of more silly out there end of it goes.
Spy, the movie Spy?
Spy, but even
that's
that was still
a comedy.
It was a comedy, but it was also still pretty grounded as a spy movie.
Was it?
I mean, in comparison to Kingsman.
Was it?
Mm. I like that movie.
I love that movie, yeah. Colin Firth joined the movie in 2013. He was on board. There was a rumor that Leo DiCaprio was in talks to play a villain, but Matthew Vaughn basically denied that. And I love this quote because he said, Leo DiCaprio came as close to playing that role as I am to becoming the Pope.
He's a Catholic. That's my question.
I don't know. But of course, Sam Jackson took the part, and we talked about how, he actually said in that interview too, we didn't hear it, but he always wanted to be, a Bond villain, but he never really wanted to be in a Bond movie because he also said that at his age, he doesn't think he has the physicality to do stuff like that.
Question.
Yeah.
Has there been a Bond villain of color that wasn't Baron Samedi?
I don't know who that is, so I can't answer it.
That's was it Live and Let Die, I think?
I mean, if you're talking about people that aren't like, Caucasian males, I mean, Javier Bardem has played a Bond villain.
I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, has there been a black dude who's been a villain in a James Bond movie?
I can't tell you. I don't know. No, I mean, I can't.
Other than Baron Samedi. So Live and Let Die, Baron Samedi was like a voodoo Haiti, wore a top hat.
Okay.
He was very, like,
so only the best representation.
Yeah, only the best representation, yeah.
But apparently, so also during the casting of this movie, Matthew Vaughn cast Sophie Cookson, very capable performance as Roxy. Of course, she doesn't really get a whole lot to do, but she's good in what she has.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I guess a lot of people were expecting more obvious candidates like Emma Watson, who I'm sure would have been great, but he really wanted to cast someone more unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Hamill was cast as Professor Arnold because it was a reference to his character in the Source comic book being named Mark Hamill.
You're almost there. I believe what happened in the comic book is that Professor Arnold is kidnapping celebrities, and one of the celebrities he kidnaps is Mark Hamill.
Oh, really?
Based on what I read.
Okay.
Yeah.
This movie, 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. So overall, well received. Some of the quotes about this movie: this slam bang action movie about British secret agents is deliriously shaken, not stirred. Even when it stops making sense, Kingsman is unstoppable fun. That's from Peter Travers.
Oh, a quick note. I love when he comes in and he asks for a martini and he goes, I need a martini made with gin, of course, stirred. Right. And I just want you to glance slightly at an unopened bottle of vermouth. That made me laugh.
Jordan Hoffman of The Guardian said, comparing the film to those of Christopher Nolan, said, despite the presence of grandfatherly Michael Caine, Kingsman's tone is about as far from the Christopher Nolan-style superhero film as you can get. Verisimilitude is frequently traded in for a rich laugh.
Is it literally just because Michael Caine was in both those movies he's comparing them? I don't think they're comparable. They're very different sorts of movies.
I think he was just saying, like, different takes on the comic book genre. The Guardian, however, was not as favorable. They called it a smirking spy spoof, weirdly charmless and dated in unintentional ways. I agree kind of the dated stuff.
Absolutely.
Weirdly, like 2014. It is a film forever demanding to be congratulated on how stylish it is.
Even Guy Ritchie looks at it and goes, wow.
It's a little much, guys. The AV Club had an interesting comment here. Far from being a Team America-style send-up of gentlemen spy movies, Kingsman is actually even more reactionary than the movies it's referencing. Mm. It traffics in the kind of Tory values Bond films merely suggest. The thing is, the movie is fun, at least from a visual design standpoint, even though it's hard to separate its bespoke fashions, future vintage gadgets, and aristocratic decor from its fusty worldview.
I like that.
Overall positive, well received. Of course, there was some criticism for the anal sex gag at the end of the film.
Yeah.
A little tasteless. This movie cost $94 million to make. It made $414 million.
No wonder they made a sequel. Two sequels.
Yeah. Well, third one still to come. Kingsman: The Golden Circle. Also fun. Probably even more problematic.
I'm interested to see The King's Man because it's got our buddy Ralph Fiennes in it. And
we got it. Jason, if that movie is good, we have to do it on the show because I feel bad for Ralph Fiennes.
Absolutely.
Having talked about a movie that
he is a fantastic actor, and yet nothing he's been in has set us on fire so far.
For this podcast, we talked about The Avengers and we talked about The English Patient.
Yeah, exactly. So
And Lawrence After Arabia.
Yeah, oh man. Rafe, you've gotten a bad run of this podcast, and we apologize, but we swear we will watch a good one at some point.
We know you're listening. We know you want a good reputation on this podcast.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's all I have for
that. So yeah, and I guess a final thing, like, again, back to Avengers. Avengers was really trying to play a spy comedy, trying to do it like with that gentlemanly kind of feel. You know, obviously John Steed is sort of in that vein, although he wears a hat, which doesn't seem to be what they do.
Mission accomplished.
But yeah, it really feels like Kingsman made good on the promise of Avengers. Not that Avengers had a super amount of promise coming out and it just was so fucking bad. But I'd like to think that Matthew Vaughn saw that and thought, that's terrible. Maybe somebody could actually do that right.
I do agree with one of the criticisms, though, where it said it feels like a 14-year-old boy may have written
this. Yes, it definitely has that feel to it, for sure.
But Jason, overall, Kingsman, what do you feel?
If we put aside the 14-year-old boy wrote it, we put aside the problematic parts of it and the Tory values and all that, this movie was fucking fantastic, Brendan. I loved every fucking second of it. It was almost too much, actually, at times. It was so balls to the wall. But man, I had a good time. And I can recommend this movie to the ends of the earth. Certainly be academic about it. Notice those things we talked about, maybe things we missed. Because, yes, there is definitely that problematic stuff in it. But as a cinematic experience, I fucking loved it.
Yeah. I would say, for me, like, aesthetically, as, like, a pure movie enjoyment on that level, certainly. Yeah. It's great. It's very entertaining.
Absolutely.
From top to bottom. The other stuff hampers it a bit. Yeah. I do feel like that kind of weighs in on it a little bit, but just acknowledge it. Be aware that there might be some stuff that you might not be on board with, but it is what it is. It's a really fun movie. Now, as far as it being on the list, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know. If you did a top 100 movies of maybe the last 22 years or so.
Yeah, because I think if you mix it in with this, with the actual list, like the BFI Top 100, yeah. I think we have the spy movies represented fairly well.
Yeah, we get Ipcrest and Bond, and like those are the you know, originators of the genre.
I mean, goddamn, I'm not putting Austin Powers on this shit either, but like...
Well, it's technically not a British movie.
It's
either.
Not a British film, but like I'm sure someone would argue for it somehow. But no, I don't know. I don't know about that, about being on the list. But I mean, certainly as a popcorn movie, mm-hmm. it's certainly entertaining. Again, just be aware there is some shit.
Yeah. But from Jason, you can get a full recommendation. Check it out. Enjoy it. Have a good time. Just be aware, very violent, very disturbing if you're not prepared for it.
Yeah.
The colorfulness of this movie is a bit of a red herring.
So now, Jason, we're going to move on to... my Brit pick next week. Mm. And that is, of course, the 2011 sci-fi thriller horror action film... Attack the Block.
The movie that introduced us all to John Boyega.
John Boyega, Nick Frost also in the movie. So we'll talk about that next week. I think similarly, not in the problematic aspect, but similarly in there are some deeper themes going on than what is on the surface. So I think we will have a lot of fun discussing and dissecting that.
And I have not seen this movie, but it's one of those movies I've always thought I should watch. So I'm excited to watch it.
There you go. We're going to talk about it. After you watch it,
I will.
But that's going to be it. So you can find us on social media. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at BFI_pod. You can find Jason on Twitter
at Jason D. McLeod for fun times, for dank memes.
Lots of anal sex jokes.
I like stuff. So check out my likes.
Yep.
And
Jason has some strong pro Tory opinions.
Absolutely. And if you come to my Twitter, we can do it in the asshole.
So follow him there. You can also, obviously, our home base is Age of Radio, ageofradio.org/forscreenandcountry. We're also on all the podcast apps. So look for us, find us, listen to us, enjoy.
Yeah, man.
But until then, until next week when we talk about Attack the Block, ooh. Jason, I just have to say to you, God save the Queen.
God save the screen.
For Screen and Country, I'm Brandon.
And I'm Jason.
Welcome to the King's Hall.
Oh, hi, mate. You got one of them grenade lighters? I got a lighter cigarette and then kill a bloke.
I'm gonna wake up, yes and no. I'm gonna kiss some part of. I'm gonna keep this secret. I'm gonna close my body.
Analyze this.